And we're back. Hey there, folks. Alex Lokes here, and this is the February episode of Classic Camera Revival.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Before we get into our main show, we'd like to do a couple of shout-outs. The first one is, of course, to the Sunny 16 podcast for the nomination for the Pillar of Community Award. Unfortunately, we only got a nomination, but we would like to extend congratulations to Emulsive, which several folks around the table have written articles for that wonderful site. And also a shout-out to
the Negative Positives podcast with Mike Gooderman. I mean, it's... I'm not going to lie, it's not a long podcast like ours or the FPP or Sunny 16 or even... But the one thing that you can really hear from Mike Gutterman's voice is pure passion for photography and film photography.
Awesome.
It's pretty awesome. He looks back at when he picked up a digital camera as the dark ages, which I think we're all starting to go down that path of looking at digital. It's the dark ages, but he really is out there with film photography, and he was very stoked about the whole new Polaroid originals. So
there we go. Yeah, I really like the new film formulation also from Polaroid original. But today we are talking about consumer cameras. Now, a lot of us around the table are pros, have been pros, semi-pro, and the great thing about film photography today is that a lot of the pro gear is now quite inexpensive to buy. But sometimes you just want something simple. So today we're going to be talking about consumer-grade cameras. That's right, those wonderful, simple cameras aimed at the everyday amateur.
The ones that break when you try them for the first time and then put them in the closet and pick them up again and they're broken and you're like, why?
All right. Well, we are going to lead it off with a camera that a lot of digital shooters probably recognize because there is one of the very first digital SLRs from Canon bears the same name, and that is the EOS Rebel. And to talk about it, we have our very own Donna.
So the EOS Rebel is one of the very first cameras that I actually ever owned. We happened to find it actually at a garage sale. And I was just starting out in the film world, and I thought this was a really cute little camera. For someone just starting out, I thought it would be fantastic to own. So I ended up buying it, trying it out. It's a great little camera. I like it. It's, again, I really like small, compact cameras. The only thing I didn't like about this camera, though, is it actually has a cheap feel to it. It's not something that you'd want to drop or definitely have your kids get a hold of it, that's for sure. But the pictures that it takes, they're actually quite decent. Not something I was actually expecting from a cheap-feeling camera. But if you're just starting out, I actually would recommend for about $5, $10 you can find from a garage sale or maybe even on eBay. I don't know, maybe about $15, $20. I would definitely recommend it as definitely your first film camera.
Well, and again, one of the best part is that it uses the EF mount. So if you have any EF lenses, not EFS, which are for the crop frame digital cameras.
Or EFM, which are for the useless camera models.
Oh, they're compact systems?
Yeah, they're super compact. CSC. That is mirrorless. No.
But again, if you have the 51.8, you can get yourself a Rebel TI body and you're good to go.
Yeah, and the 51.8 on the little nifty 50 plastic one, not the early one with the focus scale on it, but the newer one, the EF2s.
Yep.
They're super light plastic. They pop on that camera and they're awesome lenses and it's super light. So if you have you're out for a whole day shooting that thing, you won't even notice.
Exactly. We do enjoy Minoltas on this around this table.
So we got a three-way on one camera.
A three-on-one?
Took the words right out of my mouth. And that is the Minolta.
I'm going first.
700. And
so Bill's got the sloppy seconds.
James called dibs.
Not my problem.
Well, we're going to talk about the Minolta X700 today, but I guess the whole Minolta sort of X series of cameras. I think back in the day, so we're talking, I think the first X came out in the early 70s, I believe.
70s, 80s, yeah.
70s, 80s, and then sort of...
It was a weird time.
Yeah.
There were drugs.
It was strange times, yes. Very, lots of colors.
Pastel colors.
Pastels. And then it went through to the early 90s, I believe, before they, I guess, partnered up with Konica and then eventually Sony and all of that other stuff. But there's a few different models of the X series. The X700 is the one that we're talking about today. It's probably my favorite one. I think it's a good mix. The metering system is fantastic. It's got the MPS system, which is the Minolta program system, which is their whole metering, I guess, functionality that they built, which is pretty much... was fairly ahead of its time when it came out. An extremely accurate meter. It has the A for amateur setting on it. It has, I think, two amateur settings on it. I mean, I'm talking about auto when I say amateur, folks. But
yep.
I think one beeps and one doesn't beep, I believe.
No, that's a slide switch.
Or slide, yeah. Or sorry, that's just the power switch. Pardon me.
That's right.
So it has one automatic setting that works really well. The meter, I'm not sure exactly of the pattern it uses for waiting, but I think it's a bit of a more of a top sort of heavy or sort of, I guess, bottom less sensitive. It's like a fat T, a bottom less sensitive sort of layout with the metering system. So they're basically one of the first pioneers, I think, with a matrix type of system. Mm-hmm. or a weighted type of metering system, I guess, or frame weighted. One of my most favorite things about this camera is its usability. And it has an acute matte viewfinder, and I would say of all the 35 millimeter cameras that I own, and I own a lot of them and a lot of expensive ones, and I'm including some of the, like the Nikon and the A1 finders in this, nothing beats the brightness of the viewfinder of these Minolta X series cameras. They are just fantastic, excellent consumer cameras, easy, you know, to carry around, very portable. I really enjoy using mine. I really should use it more to... What do you think, Bill?
Oh, it's funny. I was gifted an X700 from a friend, and I had it for a few years. I shot with it. I loved it. And then I sort of went off Minolta for a while. So I gifted my Minolta kit to my brother. Like, it included the 202 and the X700. A few years later, I wanted to use Minolta again and got back into it. You know what happens? A friend of mine gifts me an X570. Which is essentially an X700 without the program, so it's an auto exposure camera. So it's got the same great Acumat focusing screen, which I love, but it's like you can use your MC lenses on it without any hassle. Hello.
Yeah, and you can do it with the X700 as well too. So all of the X series cameras will use both of the Minolta mounts, which is fantastic. So.
As long as you don't use program with the MC mount,
yes.
Then you'll have problems.
Yes,
and that will not be good.
Ew.
Yeah. Other than that, I was essentially, the entire kit was by and large, I think the only lens I had to purchase was the wide angle 28-2.8. I was gifted a zoom lens, a 75 to 150 for Christmas, and I was given another one. It was like a telephoto Tokina. I think it was like 60 to 200 or some weird focal length like that. And then, of course, the 51.7 you gave me that was basically new in box. So I was like, oh, wow.
Got yourself a whole kit now.
The instant kit.
Very nice. And Trevor, what's your experience with the X700?
Well, when I got into photography originally when I was 9 years old, I was caught playing with my mom's camera, which was an SRT 101.
And her shoes.
Shh, no one's meant to know about that.
He was wearing her high heels?
The question is, where was he wearing them? Welcome to the podcast, Trevor.
Oh, my. Anyway, so I started shooting with Minolta because that was the camera I had access to. And by the time I got into school and college and stuff, I had amassed a SRT 101. I had the X700. I had a MG11 and a whole bunch of lenses. So it was my three-body, five-lens kit, two TTL flashes and stuff. But when you get into photojournalism, unfortunately, if you want to continue on and be a freelance, they want you to, or work on a newspaper, that is, they wanted you to have either Canon or Nikon so that you could work with the lens pool. So I ended up having to sell all my Minolta stuff and bought into Nikon. Now, ever since then, I've always been like, oh, I miss my Minoltas, and then slowly but surely been buying them all back. And I've always loved the feel and the look of them, but all through year one and half of second year, I shot all Minolta, and every assignment, everything, it perfect exposure, didn't matter about weather, it had the winders, I could shoot sports with it. I had everything from like 20 mil to the 200, the old MC200 metal body mil lens, and that was just gorgeous. And I always regretted selling it, and now I'm been getting them back, and TTL metering with flash, and you know, the matrix style program that they have on the X700 is wonderful. The aperture priority on all their cameras works brilliantly, and
absolutely
glass wise, I mean, I would easily compare it to any Canon or a Nikon glass sharp wise, edge to edge with wide angle, wide open at 1.4 on 50s and stuff like that. And that's why, you know, now they're undervalued, and I'm more than happy to, you know, give buy them a it all good back. Home.
Absolutely. No, the X series Minoltas were great. I used in my second SLR with an X7A, which was the aperture priority only cousin of the X700. Fantastic camera. We've talked about this camera before on the show, and because of actually talking about it, I went out and bought one, because sometimes I give myself gas. And that...
you could change your cooking habits.
Not even going there.
Not going there.
No. And that would be the iconic and highly underrated F90 for us here outside of the United States, and 90 for all those south of the border.
Good old sticky back.
I'm thankfully that mine does not have... Mine actually had the sticky coating shaved off of it by the time I picked mine up, which is absolutely fantastic. But the person who actually turned me onto this camera was John Meadows. So, John, what's your view on the camera?
There's a shaving joke in there. Not even I'm going to go on for that one.
But it turned on Alex.
I agree that we've talked about the camera before. The one that I have is the N90S. And
F90X for everyone outside of the United States.
Yeah, basically, you know, the monikers are interchangeable. It's marketing and, you know, model designation per country. But anyway, there are two things about this camera. Maybe I can, like, we can talk about features. Mm. I can talk about ergonomics and price. I'm going to talk about ergonomics because, for me, like, I have... This camera also have an Nikon F4. If this camera had a built-in diopter in the eyepiece like my F4 does, the F4 would be gathering dust, because this ergonomically, this camera feels beautiful in the hand. Everything is just sort of where it's supposed to be, and I could shoot with it all day. And then there's the price. Like, I've seen bodies $30, $40, $50. If you are paying triple digits, you are paying too much.
And it better have a really good lens attached to it.
Yeah. And also, a couple of other interesting things. It has, you know, autofocus, and an SLR was pretty new back then. Its autofocus is better than the autofocus on an F4.
Yes.
Its autofocus is actually better than the counterpart digital model, the D90. I can't stand the autofocus on that thing.
No.
And the other thing I would mention is that... it was either the first or one of the first Nikons, I believe, to have active matrix metering for some lenses. I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure.
I believe, as Trevor pointed, it was the 801. The F4 had matrix metering for just about everything. The F90X and 90S, which I also own an example, The Matrix meeting room is just for the autofocus, so you have to be an AFD lens or
something along those lines. Yeah, it would have to be a D-type or a G-type lens.
Yeah.
The one thing I really like about it is, again, it works with almost every Nikon autofocus lens, including the G-type lenses, which is important because the Gs don't have an external aperture ring. But I can still run this camera in full program mode with it. Problem comes when you get into aperture priority, then you do need the... You do need the ring, if I remember correctly. Do you?
I think you might. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
But I think the bottom line is it's pretty versatile for using various kinds of lenses.
It's small in size. It's compact. If I want to take an autofocus Nikon out and use all my lenses, but I don't want to lug around the F5, I have the F90, which has both have a meter that's equivalent to each other. I can't find any mistakes between the meter in my F90 than in my much newer F5.
We were joking about the shaving or the cleaning, and that there is one issue with the camera of this age is like the rubberized, texturized
coating.
Back of the coating.
The easy grip coating.
The easy grip, it becomes a sleazy grip after a while.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
And
it doesn't want to let you go.
But it gets sort of gummy. It's sort of, you know, almost like the light seals in an old camera. But the thing is...
What I heard is that they were on old porn sets and stuff like that. So,
well, regardless of where it came from, you can clean it up and let's get clean here.
For our listeners, what is the best way to clean the backs?
What I did was I just used like a Q-tip or a cloth. You know, not a whole lot of liquid, just a little bit of isopropanol.
Yeah,
like I know we're not talking dousing it.
Yeah. Nail polish remover would work.
Yeah, and it'll soften up, and then basically, like with a whether a toothpick or some other kind of metal, like a cuticle thing for your fingernails.
Yeah,
you can remove it off. And the thing is, it just takes a bit of time.
It does. It does scratch.
Do it while you're watching a hockey game.
Yeah,
and you'll be done.
You can, on the back of mine, I can actually see in the light scratches from where. The Easy Grip coating was removed.
Yeah, as it ages, it becomes really uncomfortable and sticky. It's just an unpleasant feeling. Yeah. So,
but for like $50 or under, I'll deal with it.
Oh, yeah.
Best bang for your buck when it comes to autofocus Nikons.
And you can even get out there even in the winter with one of these cameras.
Yep, I've shot mine. Shoot, shot mine through the cold snap.
And if there's a sticky back and you got gloves on, you don't even notice.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I use that camera professionally from the day I bought it brand new through most of my days. That was actually the camera I sold all my Minolta stuff for to purchase, that and an F4. And I've shot thousands of rolls through it in sports, studio use, all sorts of stuff. And still have the camera 24 years later and very happy with it. But to hear that it's only worth $100 or less when I spent $1,400 with the grip, the battery, extra battery grip for it back in '93. It pains me to say that, but that's the reason why I still have it, because I'm not going to get what I paid for it.
Well, nope. Well, you get older and stickier, you're worth less money.
And if you've had 1,000 rolls put through you.
Yeah, that too.
That'd give me a sticky back.
Oh my God. And I think we're all going to do a collective sign-off.
Yeah. But first, as we mentioned last episode, there's plenty of new film hitting the market. And one of the first ones that have actually gotten through is the gentleman behind Cosmo Photo has released his own 100-speed film called Mono 100. Now, when I first heard about this, I was expecting a polyester-based grain fest, like something like Fomapan 400, but at 100.
Or their RetroSoft 320.
That's right. However, I was pleasantly surprised by this film. It has a much thicker base. It's acetate, which makes it easier to handle in the dark bag and loading onto reels. And incredibly fine grain, exceptionally sharp for a brand new production. It actually reminds me a lot of Kentmere 100 or Ilford Pan 100 in its tonality. It responds really well to a deep yellow filter. And yeah, I've developed it in D76, Rodinal, and T-Max developer, and I think Bill can agree with me that Rodinal is a excellent choice for it.
Yeah, I used your recipe, Rodinal 1-50, for 7.5 minutes at 20 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
I grabbed 10 rolls during the sort of, I guess you could say, the pre-production buy, and it was almost a no-brainer. It's like, okay, send the payment through PayPal. I'll just wait a few months, and of course, it shipped through the holiday season, so I have to wait a little longer.
Yeah.
And I managed to shoot a roll over New Year's weekend in Toronto on a really bright, sunny day, and when it was really, really, really cold. And I found out my F2 had its limits in the cold weather. But other than that, the tonality is insanely brilliant. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm looking forward to shooting more with this film. And yeah, Rodinal 1-50, not even their 1-25, which I think at the time for that is way too short.
That was one thing I was going to mention, is that the Rodinal 1-25 time is 3.5 minutes, which is incredibly short for such a strong dilution of Rodinal. And so I figured, I'm like, okay, let's see if I can't find something equivalent where I could actually compare a 1-25 and a 1-50 time. And I settled on actually Akros 100, where I took a look at it and went, oh, the difference is you double it and you add 30 seconds. So that's what I basically did, is I multiplied 3.5 times 2, ended up on 7 minutes, and then added 30 seconds. And I also did the normal agitation pattern, other than the, which is different from the one that he advertises on the sites. In fact, I did it for T-Max 1-4 and D76 1-1, and turned out great. I'd actually settle on T-Max, Rodinal and D76 as the best possible choices for it. The T-Max knocks the contrast back a bit, but I think maybe giving it a bit of a push might help.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to stick the Rodinal and D76 when processing. Mm-hmm. It's an old school, traditional grain, black and white, 100 speed. Why mess with success?
Exactly.
And again, congratulations to Stephen Dowling for releasing this. Yeah. Yes, I will be buying more.
Oh, definitely. I only got 4 rolls, and I learned the hard way that you need to be very careful about the type of sodium sulfate you use to make your D23. It needs to be anhydrous. If it's not, you will blank rolls. And I blanked 3 rolls of film. F key, P30, mono 100.
Hmm. Ouch.
Yeah, yuck. Not fun.
Are there any? Do they have any plans for 120?
They're making noise. Stephen was making noises about that within his community on Facebook, and I'm hoping he does.
It would be beautiful in.
Oh, it'd be gorgeous in 120. Just like, yeah, send me. Just tell me when it's released. I'll send you money. Just don't send it during the Christmas holiday rush.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are about a month into the new year, so. So plenty of us actually do projects over the course of the year, and the one that is definitely catching our eye is Mike's project. So if you want to give us a rundown of what you're doing this year with film.
Well, this year, one of the things that I've always been looking for was a 6x9 rangefinder. I don't know why, I just really like the format, the really big negative. And one of the things that I've always had a hard time finding was one that was relatively affordable. Mm. And that's been the whole thing. Like, I mean, sure, I've looked at things like the big Fuji Not Film 690. I've looked at the Medalist. I've looked on at several of the Moskva. And, of course, everybody knows the Zeiss Icon Super Iconta, the one that I happened to pick up for literally a steal, a 532. This thing it's so much fun to play with. And what I'm doing this year is I'm basically dedicating pretty much the entire year just shooting strictly this camera, getting to know it, getting to do as much as I can with it, and seeing what I get out of it. I mean, it's an old uncoated lens, and I'm not going to be doing anything other than rolling as much film, and it doesn't matter whether it's black and white, color, E6, C41, doesn't matter at all. I've got some filters on the way, including a Kodak Raten 89 filter on its way, so I'm looking at some
infrared.
Infrared, yep. I am looking at doing some infrared with this. And that's another thing that I got for an absolute steal. So IR filters, as we know, are expensive, but Series 6, Raten 89, plus the push-on filter and everything for this camera, I've got some Konica IR sitting in my freezer, I've got some EFKA, and I have some Rolly IR, so I'm going to see what I can do with this camera.
Awesome. Well, where can we follow along on that project?
You can catch this project at www.dualview.ca, dual for two, D-U-A-L, view.ca, not dual as I'm not fighting with the camera on this one. And basically I'm just looking through the viewfinder, and that's one of the things why I'm calling it dual view, how my camera sees the world. Is I don't have any kind of depth of field preview, nothing with this camera. It's I focus, and then I look through a viewfinder that's basically just looking through a optically changed sheet of glass. So it's to match the focal length of this lens and what it sees. And so far, I'm liking what it sees.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. My name's Alex Lokes, and I'm saying pistols at dawn.
What did she do?
Duel.
Oh, but I'm just thinking pistols at dawn. What did she do?
Donna.
Mike is used to hearing pissed and Donna at the same time.
Yeah.
This is John Meadows. Go ahead, buy that consumer camera. Don't blame me when you buy a Leica 2 years from now.
This is James Lee. When in doubt, put it in A for amateur.
This is Bill Smith, and I am at a lot of loss for words this month, so I'm just going to hand it over to Trevor.
Thank you for inviting me onto the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with everybody, and remember, P equals professional.
M equals master, by the way.
This is Donna Pataxi, and keep that film rolling.
This is Mike Pataxi, and the part that James is... I'm not going to go there, actually. I'm just going to leave it at master. Let's land it at that.
You're not going to bait the audience?
With bated breath.
Take the bait.
At least Trevor's mom only caught him playing with her camera.